Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you, Dr. Paul?
Good. And, you know, we had a little picture up there to find out who these terribly dangerous people are out there that aren't allowed to express themselves. You know, we need to close this down. Yeah. But we did find that picture a bit interesting, pretty and I think funny. We'll show it again and just make sure everybody saw the details of this.
I think
you're the one that spotted this picture to really get a message out of it, because I think it's an interesting message, serious but funny too.
Yeah, it is. It shows it, there's a lot there.
Put it back up. Yeah. There, I mean, the point is, obviously,
it's not as cut and dried as people think.
Yeah, I mean, this whole idea that the Confederate flag is being held by a black man, and then we have Black Lives Matter, this white person that knows what black lives are all about. You know, that's kind of stuff, you know, is so much distortion.
Yeah. And, but course, they're not fighting, at least. It looks like they're talking.
No. But this whole thing about Black Lives Matter, and it's not racist and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, gross distortion. I think, unfortunately, what's going on now, when you see these demonstrations or no matter what's happening, and they say, so it's all freedom of expression and free speech and hate speech and on. But to me, it's all orchestrated. The media is the director, and they play it up. And it takes some strategy to get some of these demonstrations going. But sometimes I think quite possibly the demonstrators are financed by the same people.
Yeah, both sides.
You know, same people and radical. But they want conflict. And of course, there's probably, this is just my view with no proof, my suspicion is that both sides have, you know, some bad radical people, but they're probably not the majority. You get these followers and fellow travelers and people who are frustrated and might just endorse one part of the message, and then they go out and then the media goes and takes it and emphasizes the really bad stuff. They can find some bad looking people, and if you happen to be in a media that leans liberal, which is the whole episode, yeah, they always show it as biased in one direction. And obviously right now it's always, you know, against the president, no matter what he says. Yeah. It's going to be that he's on the wrong side of the issue. And, of course, we know he sets himself up for some of that.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, we were thinking about this story that we both read earlier, right after the Charlottesville incident, that was pretty unprecedented. I don't know that I've seen it before, where you had the top brass from the Pentagon get up there all and say, they denounce extremists in America. They denounce the neo-Nazi, the white supremacist. It really was kind of an unprecedented thing. You know, they don't usually look inward toward what's happening in the U.S.
They didn't quite look at it the way we were looking at it.
Yeah, and it's very interesting. You know, we know that the military has done a pretty good job at integrating people back in the bad days, Jim Crow and all these things. The military was one area where blacks and whites, you know, did mix in society, and they were very successful. But I think this is something very different.
Yes, but it's the hypocrisy that should annoy everybody, and it annoys us all the time, because they say one thing and do another. But here it is that there's a condemnation, you know, a blanket condemnation of those on alt-right, that every single one of them deserved to be put in prison and maybe even assassinated by some people. At the same time, the hypocrisy means that all this fancy talk, purity of thought, yet they go, we go as a country, and we and our people allow our government to go and support some of the worst people in the world. And we've spent some time describing what's happened in Ukraine, you know, when the revolution was occurring and the coup, the American coup. And yet right now, what are we doing? Sending weapons to the people that we put in place, and they're not exactly, good libertarians. Matter of fact, their record is very bad, and they've had associations with fascists, and they've been rather ruthless. And that coup in 2014 really caused a lot of havoc in that country, with what, 2.5 million people that were Russian sympathizers. They lived next next door and had been Russian. They spoke Russian. They had to leave and go out. And, of course, even on the other side, fearful of violence, there was, I think, 600,000 or 900,000 that had to go into Europe just to escape the chaos. That the evidence is just almost perfect, maybe perfect, about us participating in creating the coup. You know, it was all American strategy, and yet here we are, you know, looking for this fight at home to make sure that we're on the right side. You know, I often think about if they ask somebody to say, well, tell me that you don't support radical Nazis. Well, you know, it's almost an insult. Sort of like the question, when did you quit beating your wife? Prove to me you don't do that. It almost should be thrown back. They get too much credibility if you get on the defensive. Oh, no, I didn't do that. I didn't do that. But here we are, hypocritically, but there's more than just Ukraine where this has happened.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, but on the Ukraine thing, you have not only was it the Pentagon saying this, but remember, John McCain was very strong talking about how this terrible white supremacist, this terrible neo-Nazis in Charlottesville. Okay, of course they're terrible. But let's take a look at what John McCain was doing over there in Ukraine. His record is not clean. We've got a picture of McCain. Here he is meeting with Tihanibuk, the head of the Slavota Party. And look at here's Tihanibuk on his off hours. He's not pointing at the sun or pointing at the eclipse. He's doing a salute, a Hitler salute. And this is the case with much of the opposition that the U.S. supported in Ukraine. We've got other pictures of it as well. Certainly not everyone involved in it was, but really the core, the vanguard, you'd say, did have fascist sympathies.
And wasn't it McCain that picked the wrong people in Syria to support?
He met with some terrorists in Syria.
And they got some money from us, you know. So it's generally the case with our foreign policy. You know, it's totally inconsistent. But I think of, you know, how we deal with Saudi Arabia. Their record for humanitarianism isn't all that great. The Wahhabis can be pretty violent, and the Saudis can be pretty aggressive against Yemen. And yet, morally and financially, we're guilty. We're their partners in a lot of that, and we're engaged there. Yet at the same time, you know, we pretend that we are promoting Americans' greatness around the world on exceptionalism, and we are the true patriots that are going to show people how to live in peace and democracy. So it's the hypocrisy that I think that most people see through now. But they have trouble still sorting all this out because nobody wants to be. They get trapped. They might agree with the silliness of this conflict that supposedly is going on, but they don't want to get into this thing of saying, "No, I'm not a Nazi," you know, and I'm not you know, part of that outfit, and get into this position of denial. I think the real harm comes from the people who orchestrates these demonstrations, because there's a fertile field out there. There's a lot of people who are exasperated. And then at the same time have a foreign policy which totally contradicts what they're pretending to be against.
Yeah, hypocrisy is the perfect word because, you know, we non-interventionists are the anti-extremists, you know. Interventionism as a foreign policy requires U.S. to support extremists overseas. They are the ones that do things that the U.S. wants them to do. You mentioned Saudi Arabia. That's an obvious case. But look through history where the U.S. has had to back extremists that would be denounced in the U.S. Look at the Contras. Look at our entire 1980s in Central and South America supporting extremists. Look at the 1970s in Afghanistan. Guess what? We're still there. Where the U.S. decided, where people like Brzezinski decided, let's support radical jihad because then we're going to take those Soviets out. And here we have it. Syria, the U.S. has funded, has backed Al-Qaeda directly and indirectly, and ISIS in Syria. So interventionist foreign policy requires extremists overseas.
Yes. The interventionist foreign policy is designed to expand and protect the empire. And that explains it. Their goal is empire. Their goal is not peace and justice. And therefore, they take this position. But from their viewpoint, they think they're consistent. You know, the neocons don't think they're inconsistent. McCain's not going to say, oh, no, I'm very consistent. But deep down in his heart, we know what his goals really are. And the neocon is more consistent than, say, Trump. Trump some days we say, hey, he looks like a neocon. Other days, oh, you know, he looks like he's an independent thinker. Yeah. But the neocons, just think about how the neocons, you know, flocked to the defense of Trump and just praised him about this wonderful speech they just heard about why Trump should be more interventionist. It's his foreign policy speech. I mean, McCain and Graham and Rubio, they all just love that speech because from the neocon position, it's consistent, and they believe they're working within the Constitution, but they also believe in the unitary imperialistic president that dictates everything.
Yeah, and they're happy for a while. But, you know, when they do go over there and they do back radicals and extremists that we would rightly denounce here in the U.S., they call it promoting democracy, you know. And it reminds me of what it must have been like to be under Roman occupation, you know, where you had a certain sector of the population that was going to be the enforcers, and they were, you know, working for Caesar. You're right, it is like an empire, and that's why the empire seeks people like this that are radicals, that carry chains and do radical things overseas.
Yeah, I think it happens all the time. It's not like this is a rare exception. It seems to be routine. And I think the one thing that escapes most Americans is the fact that we are so much involved, say, in Ukraine. First thing off, if you go out on the street and ask a lot of people, where's Ukraine?
Yeah.
I didn't study that in school because I missed my geography class. Oh, they don't have geography anymore. So they don't really care that much about it. But what sets the standard is what is pumped out on the news media. And that's one thing, you know, we're frustrated with a lot of what Trump does. But I have to admit that when he comes down on hard on the criticism of how biased the media is, it's not very friendly at all.
It's true, the propaganda. I mean, the propaganda is more intense than probably it was for the average Soviet citizen, because to the extent that anyone here in the U.S. thinks about Ukraine anymore, they're going to have two thoughts. One, oh, that's right, Russia invaded Ukraine. And oh, that's right, they annexed Crimea. They don't know anything about the precipitating factors. They don't know anything about the fact that the Russians were already in Crimea. They didn't need to invade it. They had already leased the naval base there. And so many other things. The propaganda is just so strong.
What I find interesting is that here at home, they'll use this argument, left versus right, for the conflict. But when it comes to the support of our policies, whether it's the coup in Ukraine or whatever we're doing with Saudi Arabia, it's both parties. The leaders on the Republican Party, the leaders of the Democrat Party, you know, are supporting it. They don't fight over this. Look how many Democrats, or at least, the neocons have come to the support of Trump. So that's, he was more bipartisan, you know, when he says that I'm going to use force. Mm-hmm. We're not walking out. You know, the thing that would have been a most abhorrent to most of the so-called Republican and Democratic leaders would say, if Trump would have gotten out and said, 17 years too long, we're not winning, and we've spent a lot of money, it's not in our interest, why should we pursue this and end up like we had to hurry out of Vietnam, that we are just going to leave, we will give the instructions to the people who are going to be taking over the defense of their country, but we're leaving. I mean, there would have been the impeachment process probably would have started, you know, for some other reason.
Yeah.
But that would have been the real reason, because that is what really drives politics in Washington. When you think of all the money involved from the military-industrial complex, and once again, after his speech, the weapons industries had a tremendous boost in their stocks again.
I remember you went to check the markets right after he finished talking.
That tells you something about it.
Well, what he could have said is, you know, I just remember that I read something by these two guys, last name of Paul. One of them I've been praising for a few years about Afghanistan. The other one just wrote a great editorial the day before about getting out. I'm going to take their advice and get out. That would have been
good. Wouldn't that be nice? So how would you like to conclude our little program today?
Well, if you don't like extremism, if you're opposed to extremism, then you should be a non-interventionist, because interventionism requires the U.S. government to partner with extremists overseas to do things to back U.S. Foreign policy. And if you are a non-interventionist, may I recommend that you come to our conference next month on September 9th in Washington, D.C. You can get your tickets right here at the address online, and we're going to talk about these and other very important issues.
And I would like to address the subject of the people who are critical and saying, well, how do you guys know us? Know who to give the money to? Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? Who are the martyrs? Well, we don't have to deal with that. We don't have to deal with which side we're on in Ukraine. We're on the side of not giving our money and not sending our troops and not picking the government overseas. This whole idea that we're responsible for all that means that we have to fight over which side we support. So the non-interventionist foreign policy is easy to understand. It's easy to defend. And fortunately, it saves a lot of money. It's very beneficial to the country. And if you care about peace and prosperity, you will be a non-interventionist in foreign policy. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.